We begin with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Hi, Ken. Good to talk to you again.
The moral health of the country. I love that.
You're not part of that conversation, but maybe you have a comment on it, do you?
Well, no. Let's continue.
No, what this is about, Ken, is the counter protests are good when they happen, but what if you're a citizen who's really interested in being a part of pushing back on white supremacy and white nationalism? What can you do that really matters? So that's what we're in depth on. And, you know, I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
That's a very fair question. That's a very fair question, because when you respond to violence with violence, or you respond to the threat of violence with the threat of violence, you become the moral equivalency, as President Trump will say, with the Nazis and the Klansmen. And yet the thought of equating the two is just beyond the pale. But you're absolutely right. That is a dilemma for people who just are incensed about watching people walking down the street with pictures of Hitler and swastikas and Klan regalia, and you respond in kind by having your own march. It's a very tricky dilemma.
Yeah. We have a guest for that conversation who's an expert on complicity of bystanders. So, and again, this is, I think, a question that average Americans are asking themselves. I care about this. I don't want to be seen, or I don't want to be positioned as just a bystander. But what do I do that really matters? So,
You know, that is a great question, and I will listen. I will be listening because that is a dilemma that people have been wrestling with for years, but especially in the time when you see just the hate marches through cities like Charlottesville, and you say, do I sit back? Do I sit back like people sat back in Germany in the 1930s? I mean, I don't know what the apt comparison is, but, you know, if you're really incensed by all this growing hate,
right,
you have to decide what it is the proper course to respond with.
And actually, our guest's expertise is in complicity in the Holocaust. So you've really put your finger on that.
That's a great conversation.
I was watching Stephen Hayes from the Weekly Standard, the conservative political magazine newspaper, on the Sunday shows, and he pointed out something that I thought was pretty important in the aftermath of these white supremacist demonstrations and how the president reacted to them. Hayes said that President Trump is actually pleased with where he is and where the country sees him as. And here's a direct quote. Hayes said, he's happy with this, and for those of us who have fought the identity politics of the left, it's incredibly discouraging to see the embrace of this part of the right of the same odious identity politics. First, do you think he's right that the president is overall pleased with the wake of Charlottesville and his remarks and how they've been received?
I saw that interview that was on Meet the Press, and I don't think, certainly the president is not pleased with what the national press, the national media has responded with to his so-called famous moral equivalency and the false equivalency between the Nazis and the protesters. But I think Stephen Hayes is right. I think between President Trump and Trump's supporters, I think they feel that it was a basically good week. Forget about the polls that show him with 36% of the vote. I think the thing is that he stood up for what he believes in, what his base believes in, that you know, both sides are equally abhorrent, and they'll talk about the Antifa as much as they'll talk about the Nazis. So, yes, I think Stephen Hayes is right. I think Trump feels he had a good week. He felt he stood up for what he believes in. And whether Steve Bannon is there or not, Stephen Bannon, believe me, has not gone far. I mean, moving from the White House to Breitbart is really not that much of a trip away from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. He will stay close, and he will keep on doing what Steve Bannon has been doing for the past year.
Yeah, since you mentioned Bannon, the Times has an article today about that Bannon was planning to leave. I think as of mid-July, the discussions began. And then the exit was supposed to be in mid-August, much more amicably and quietly. And then Charlottesville happened. Do you think Bannon has been on his way out for at least a month?
Well, if you buy the argument that John Kelly, the new White House chief of staff, has come in to clean house or make things more palatable, then you can make the argument that Kelly, who helped engineer the removal of Anthony Scaramucci, could very well have been said, look, this is absolutely untenable having somebody like Steve Bannon, who has pushed President Trump to these kind of views about Charlottesville, for example, and he probably encouraged, you know, if that, given the fact that Trump spoke Saturday when he talked about many sides to Monday when he really condemned white nationalism and the Klan and the Nazis to Tuesday when he said, I'm just kidding, I think there really is many sides are at fault. I think Bannon was very instrumental in the Saturday and Tuesday conversations. And the fact that he gave this interview with the American Prospect, a liberal magazine, over the last couple of days before that, where he basically, everybody knows that he's trashing H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor. He's trashing Jared Kushner. He's trashing Ivanka Trump. He has no hesitation of doing that at all. And, you know, depending on what story you believe, either he was wearing out his welcome at the White House, or maybe he feels that, like, he knew his days were numbered and maybe his influence would be even better sitting from the outside at Breitbart and not having to worry about being fired from anything.
See, I find this interesting that you're saying that Bannon was highly influential with Trump, because it just seems that the president, I don't know how much he takes in the advice around him, but he seems to decide to make a lot of these remarks off the cuff, right? I mean, did anybody, including Bannon, know that last Tuesday he was going to say the things that he said? It seemed in some ways extemporaneous. So what do you think? I mean, Bannon is saying things over the course of a weekend that the president starts to think about, and that's how he's influential? Who is influential with him?
No, I think what you saw on Tuesday, that was let Trump be Trump. That was vintage Donald Trump. The fact that Steve Bannon and the president of the United States may have the same viewpoint about things like Charlottesville and the response to what happened in Charlottesville, I don't think there's any question about that. I think it's wrong to say that Donald Trump is so pliable that some strong ideologue like Steve Bannon could come and change his mind.
Exactly.
I mean, the line about Ronald Reagan was he would always agree with the last person who spoke to him. That was either fair or not fair, but that was always the criticism about Ronald Reagan. No, I think that Donald Trump has these nativist views that Steve Bannon is not creating, but the fact is they are kindred spirits. They both agree on these kind of issues, and we don't know what kind of conversations Bannon had with Trump prior to that Tuesday reversal, but it's just remarkable that when you watched the president on Monday reading those lines on the teleprompter about the dangers of neo-Nazism and white supremacy, it looked like they were twisting his arm to read it.
I know.
And he felt much more energized and truly Trump when he was in the hallway, the lobby of Trump Tower on Tuesday, going all out on the alt-left.
You know what was missing on Monday that was all over the place on Tuesday was conviction. And you can tell when he has conviction. And you can tell when it's not there and when it is there. Let me say this to any listeners who want to get in with a question. The Political Junkie is with us, as always, on Mondays. If you have a question about Bannon, which we've been talking about, President Trump, his trip to Phoenix tomorrow, any of the other issues, the Boston demonstrations, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at @CarrieMPR. Ken, I really have been looking forward to talking to you about this, about these business leaders who have followed one another off the business councils, and now the president shut them down, I don't know, midweek or something. I know they're getting a lot of attention for being profiles in Courage. What took them so long? And by the way, it took the CEO of Merck to start this. And then they all found their backbones to fall. I don't understand why they're being held up as these profiles in Courage.
Well, actually, I am among those who do hold them up as profiles in Courage. Yes, there were 6 months of very outlandish conversations and outlandish remarks coming from 1600 Pennsylvania. But sometimes there is a line. I mean, we always talked about during the campaign that whether it's the Khan family, the Muslim Khan family, or the attacks on the disabled New York Times journalist or John McCain or Access Hollywood tapes, you always say, did a line get crossed? And I really think that Charlottesville was a line that got crossed. And plus the fact, look, this may not be just, you know, simple just being magnanimous. I mean, there was a lot of pressures on these countries that we're going to boycott you if you keep your mouth quiet. And so a lot of it had to do with the bottom line, the profits and things like that. And those who criticize these companies can say, well, they had no choice.
You've just made my point.
Backlash.
I mean, if you're going to be part of the council and you're going to represent your company with integrity, don't you have to hold up that integrity in the tougher times and not just the easy times?
I agree with you.
I agree with
you completely. But at the same time, the thought, first of all, most of these companies historically are not political. They just serve at the they serve the president because that's what you're supposed to do, serve the president. Yes, it did take a long time. It took a long time for Democrats to break from the Vietnam War under Lyndon Johnson, much longer than it should have. Yes, I think it would have been nice if these people reacted earlier when there were these just outlandish statements about women and Muslims and Latinos and everything like that. But I fall under the line of, is it later than they should have? Yes. The fact that they did it is still courageous? Yes.
What about this faith council? There's still members of the clergy that are part of it, of his council on faith or whatever he calls it. How do you defend that?
Isn't that something? I mean, this, first of all, the fact that you had the Jerry Falwell Juniors of the world backing somebody who showed all the moral character of somebody who was, you know, married three times and gladly talked about groping women and insulted women and insulted people of faith. And the fact that so many of these evangelical religious leaders never broke and still hasn't broke. That is, to me, that is almost a bigger story than those industry and business leaders who eventually did walk away.
A call for you, Ken, here from John in Rochester. Hey, John, what do you want to know from Ken?
Well, I've heard a lot that trip to Arizona tomorrow is at least partly to pardon Joe Arpaio. Is that just rumor or is that actually the reason for the trip?
What do you know about that, Ken?
You know something? I'm so glad you asked that because I was going to bring that up, that trip. First of all, there are two things. I mean, Joe Arpaio, of course, who has spent a lifetime, or at least a career-wise, doing everything he can to restrict the rights of Latinos to vote, to live, to drive, to eat. It's just ridiculous. And he was indicted and convicted. And then you have the president going to this rally in the aftermath of Charlottesville, one, where you have the possibility of a Joe Arpaio pardon, and two, Jeff Flake, who's one of the more a very conservative senator from Arizona, I suspect that he's going to go launch another tirade against Flake, who's up for re-election next year, as somebody who's a fraud and a hoax and bad. And I mean, it's interesting that he seems to have more anger and disgust at fellow Republicans like Jeff Flake, like Dean Heller, like Mitch McConnell, than he does about certainly more than Vladimir Putin. And I just think that this is a poorly timed time to have a rally with supporters who basically feel that Charlottesville was a walk in the park. And we'll see if he riles them up the way he's riled his supporters up in previous rallies, but I think it's ill-timed.
A call here for you from Pat in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Hey, Pat, hi.
Morning. I just want to know when Gorka and Miller are going to be booted from the White House.
Well, that's a great question, man. We used to say that about Steve Bannon for the longest time. When is he going to be gone? But Gorka and Steve Miller are also part of that group. It is interesting. Steve Miller is Jewish, and he's also like Gary Cohn is the head of the economic, you know, the economic advisors, and Steven Mnuchin, who's the Treasury Secretary. there's a lot of pressure on them from Jews around the country saying, how do you stand, how do you stay in an administration that has such contempt for, well, look at Charlottesville. And so we're waiting for those things to happen, but we could keep waiting for all we know. I mean, I think it has less to do with the President Trump and more about John Kelly, the chief of staff. The chief of staff is not going to rein in Donald Trump from making unbelievable foreign policy announcements about North Korea at the drop of a hat, or start tweeting in the middle of the night about Mitch McConnell. But perhaps John Kelly may have something to say about those who serve the president.
Ken, you preempted my mystery newsmaker of the week, so we're going to play it because you mentioned Senator Bob Corker, and I think we have to hear this to understand how truly.
Wait, can I guess now who it's going to be?
How truly extraordinary what he said. Okay, you ready to listen to this?
I am.
Here we go.
The president has not yet been able to demonstrate the stability, nor some of the confidence that he needs to demonstrate in order to be successful.
I mean, that is pretty extraordinary from a Republican. If you parse what he's really saying there, competence and stability. He's using
stability,
some powerful language.
Yes, and you know something? There were so many Republicans. Everybody's saying, why aren't the Republicans standing up to Trump? And a lot of the Paul Ryans and the Mitch McConnell saying, yes, we are standing up. We're saying that there is no place in our American society for bigotry. To me, that is hardly standing up for Donald Trump, because anybody could say that, and Donald Trump could say that. The fact that he talked about and questioned the president's stability is one of those rare moments where somebody as important as Bob Corker,
right,
the senator from Tennessee, who's the chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, widely respected on foreign policy, to say that he lacks the stability, to see Jeff Flake of Arizona talking about the fact that the president has lost his moral authority, that goes way beyond the Paul Ryans and the Mitch McConnells. And I've said this, you know, I always think about this with Nixon. Nixon didn't resign because of Peter Rodino and Elizabeth Holzman and Sam Ervin. He resigned when the Goldwaters of the world went to him and said, your term in office is untenable. The party has left you. Until the Republican Party leaves Donald Trump, all these, and I know this is on Twitter, that everybody, there's a impeach Trump meme on Twitter that's been going on forever. Nothing like that is going to happen as long as the Republican Party stays with the president. And right now, for the most part, they are.
I think it wouldn't be a junky session unless we got Nixon in there somewhere, right?
Well, you know something. I mean, history reminds us of things. You know, everything isn't in a vacuum. And while the comparisons are not exact, they are instructive. And it's exactly the way that we saw the Republicans respond to Nixon, which, by the way, from the moment of the break-in to the resignation, it was 2 years. So people saying, why hasn't Robert Mueller thrown him out of office yet? There's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Ken, good to talk, and I'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you, Carrie.
Ken Rudin, the political junkie.